You're listening to Kaleidoscope, America's number one radio magazine. Stay tuned for more.
Hello and welcome. This is Ariella for Kaleidoscope Radio Magazine. How many times have you said, one nation, under God, indivisible? Well, I said it plenty of times, but the last few years I felt pretty silly saying it because I don't feel indivisible. This country has been divided very dramatically. I've never seen, never witnessed, never heard of such discord in a nation as we have had in the past few years. And this is going to be today's topic. Now, because we're going to be talking about politics, I need to advise you that the opinions stated here on the program are those of the producer and the host and the guests on the show. They are not those of the radio station or any of its affiliates, the children, or their pets. So now, we are very fortunate to have here with us an actress, a writer, director, playwright, business owner, Lee Kessler. She has been nominated twice for the Emmy, once for Collision Course and once for Which Mother Is Mine. And she has authored a most incredible book, which is going to be a top seller. It's called White King and the Doctor. So welcome, Lee. Very wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great.
Looking forward to talking to you.
Great. Now, as an actress, what did you enjoy doing the most?
Well, the role that you just referred to, the Collision Course, I was actually submitted for Emmy nomination, didn't get an Emmy nomination for that, but I was playing Margaret Truman in a movie about the collision course between General MacArthur and President Truman at the end of the Korean War. And I loved doing that. Also, on the stage in New York, I had the privilege of playing the legendary diarist and novelist Anna Esenin, and I was the first woman in history to ever be authorized to play her. And that, along with a wonderful opportunity to play opposite Peter O'Toole in a movie called Creator, those are kind of standouts along the way here.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, you're also a business owner. What kind of business do you have?
Yes, I've had an internet marketing business and leadership development business for a number of years, and that allowed me to be one of the pioneers in internet commerce.
Wow, very cool. Now, we're going to talk today about your book, White Great. King and the Doctor, which is a most amazing book and mandatory reading for anybody who breathes. Really, truly amazing. May I ask you what interested you in writing about politics and the terrorists and all of that?
Well, I didn't start out to do that. What happened after 9/11, I felt on that day that we were in the fight of our lives and that if we fail, the whole world enters a new dark age. So I, like Americans, trying to figure out what we could do, what could I do. And initially, I just worked in the area of commerce. But as we came towards the 2004 elections, what you just talked about, this indivisible, and that the level of discord and rancor and anger, I did not expect, not only did I not expect it, but at a time when Americans should be more united and politicians should be more united, we were more divided than at any time in my lifetime. That caused me to want to take a look in there because I recognized from some other training and background and experience I've had in my entertainment industry career that there was, in fact, a fifth column operating inside the United States. And that's a term for a force operating inside a country whose purpose is to break solidarity, to sabotage, and so on. And once I spotted that, then that led me on quite an adventure that resulted in White King and the Doctor.
Right. A most amazing trip, I have to say. Now, you wrote the book as a suspense novel.
Yes.
But you've done quite a bit of research on the real-life terrorists.
That's correct. It's a suspense novel, but it's based on actual facts. Mm-hmm. And I felt I had to take it into novel format because although I was dealing with real people, of course, I'm speculating, I'm taking it through the point of view of the mastermind of Al-Qaeda, so I'm having to speculate there. And putting it into novel format, I think, enables people to look at the concepts a little bit more, get involved in the story, and if the story seems plausible and it's based upon the facts and headlines that they've been living through and recognizing and so on, all of a sudden they may go, wow, that's a wake-up call. And that was my intention, that there's something happening to us in America mm-hmm. that we're not aware is happening, and if we don't wake up, we're done.
Right. Now, from your book, I understand, first of all, forget Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm. He's as good as gone. He'll never bother us again. We don't need to bother about him at all. Now, the person to concentrate on is Ayman al-Zawahiri.
Correct. In my opinion, yes. It was one of the early things in research that I did. Israeli intelligence had tried to warn the Americans long before 9/11 that they regarded him and one other man, Mohammed Atef, who's now dead, we killed him, as the two most dangerous men on the planet. And Israeli intelligence said that their best analysts could never figure these guys out. They didn't know what they looked like, and they never knew what move they were going to make next. That was intriguing to me. I took that on as a challenge to see if I, using acting technology of playing real people, could figure out what Zawahiri would be doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say that Israeli intelligence said they couldn't figure out what he looks like. So what is this picture that's on everybody, on the playing cards, on the website, and on the cover of your book?
Well, the picture that's on the cover of the book, at least right now, before we change and do a new edition with that, is taken from the FBI site, but who that picture is one of the great mysteries in the book. And why is it that we don't really know what he looks like, and why did the Israelis say that? That's part of the mystery and the suspense of it. Is there something that he's doing, and has he gone someplace other than we think he's gone to affect his next things that he's going to do to us?
Right. Very interesting. Now, you talked about Shinoy. There's a person who produced or co-produced Al-Qaeda videos. Mm-hmm. Now, he, you say, received awards for war films that he had produced before. And al-Zawahiri recruited him because he knew a secret about some sexual exploits and a cult he belonged to.
Right.
Anything you can add to that?
Well, that character is a fictitious character. This is where I was into the area of exploration of how are they doing the videos and the audios that they're releasing. And I decided to partner them up with India's film and television industry, which is so very strong, and they're more advanced in many ways than American films. And knowing that bad guys and evil guys always have a folder that they blackmail people with, I simply created the whole storyline that you're referring to as to how is it that Al-Qaeda has a propaganda machine greater than anything we're experiencing in American television or films. That's the main point on it.
Now, you brought up an extremely interesting point where you say Al-Qaeda filmed 30 or more, oh, actually more than 100, I think you said, of tapes, videotapes, and adjusted the tape for every eventuality. So a tape that comes out today and recent events are mentioned in a tape. We say, oh, my goodness, it just happened. You know, he must be still alive and doing well, and they just recorded it. Well, in fact, that might not be the case.
Correct. If you get a great writer who's done great research, they will be able to speculate and formulate what is a possible future scenario. And so part of the mystery and the suspense of the book is what they put out there and were able to correctly assess would be things that we would do. See, the main point of that is they know their enemy. I don't believe we know our enemy, but they know our enemy. They're studying us, and they adjust their tactics. And because they're playing a lot of this in a game of propaganda and deception, they have studied what we're likely to do on all the fronts that we will operate. And as such, then they can invent a scenario and film one and come up pretty close. I think they've come up very close.
Wow. Do you believe that the DNA that the Egyptians are holding of Zawahiri is not his DNA?
I believe it is not. Okay. There's some research to back up that theory of mine.
Right. Now, Zawahiri is a doctor, a psychiatrist. Right. How did he use these skills to recruit new people?
Well, his background's fascinating between the psychiatry and medicine and pharmacology. He has the capabilities of a lot of mind control. He does use a technology that he learned while he was in prison of pain drug hypnosis. So he does know how to, while someone is in pain, administer a drug and then do a hypnotic command. The recent movie Blood Diamond shows that very graphically of how these child soldiers are being created by using drugs and pain with these young boys. In a matter of a few days, they can convert them into a stone-cold killer. Mm-hmm. He uses that technology, and they have been using it in recruiting. He also, though on a higher level with the mind, clearly understands that if you can stick somebody in a maybe, where maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't, in other words, maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, in other words, it's equally weighted, and they're stuck in a maybe, they won't make decisions. If you don't make decisions, you don't take actions. If you don't take actions, then you lose self-confidence. And he's able to manipulate people by getting them stuck in this, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, maybe there's something there, maybe there's something not. That's a very high level of mind control. But he uses a lot of drugs and just tremendous PR. He and his team, I think, are the best public relations team operating on the planet today. And in fact, I think they're cleaning our clock.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that, because in our schools, we teach our kids that, well, we may not be right, and we always need to consider somebody else's viewpoint, and we shouldn't be so sure that we really know what we know, that we really feel what we feel, especially culturally and with interpersonal relationships. And when you spoke about Zawahiri and his methods, it occurred to me that this is what we're doing to our kids at schools, mm-hmm. plus all the drugs we're feeding the children, you know, especially psychotropic drugs. I mean, mm-hmm. wouldn't that be one of Zawahiri's methods?
Yeah, it's an open door to him, frankly. Whether he originated or not is not necessary. I think he tapped into a line. You have to understand that these guys study Stalin. They've studied Lenin. They studied Hitler. They're their heroes. You know, it's hard for Americans to get that, but the heroes of these guys are men like that, and they studied that line. That line was laid in here long ago to undermine America by taking down its children and taking down its education system. That came straight out of communism and straight out of the Soviet Union. So as we have continued to drug kids here and all the things you're talking about, that's like an open door for the technology that he knows how to use. It was like a little gift we gave him. And given that Al-Qaeda, I think they're brilliant because they've had limited resources, but every resource they have had, they've maximized. But they are taking things that we might have even regarded as a strength and turning it into one of their resources. And I think we need to wake up on that because he's using it for sure.
Can you give me an example of that? I mean, you just mentioned about the drugs and about people being indecisive.
Yeah, I can give you another one. Americans, I think, by nature are good people. We have a very strong sense of fair play. We're a very just people. And I think we're known by sane people for being that way. But that sense of fair play can be perverted, you see, into that maybe thing of we've got to consider everything with equal weight. Well, you can't get to the truth if you consider everything as equal weight. You know, or if you do 99 good things in a day and one bad thing, mm-hmm. but I reported on the news the one bad thing equally weighted with the good thing, I have now reduced all the good things and elevated the bad thing. That's not the truth. So you can't arrive at the truth by that equal weighting. And so our sense of trying to be fair with everybody has also allowed us to get into a trap where we can't even identify the enemy because we're trying to be so fair to everybody. And also the goodness. It's not in our nature to want to intentionally harm somebody. And we're a country that welcomed other people. So he's using that definitely as part of his weaponry. It's a dilemma for us. It's a tightrope we're walking.
Right. So the key is really to be aware of all of it,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and to learn something from it and know what to do about it. Now, you also talked about Saddam Hussein.
Right.
He sold his weapons of mass destruction?
Yes. I had already put that in the book. I knew it had to be because we knew they were there before. And I had, I don't want to spoil the whole suspense of the
right.
book, but there is a mystery about why he did what he did and who they were attempting to discredit with it. So that's all in the book. But since then, it has come out now that he has been hanged and his trial transcripts and, you know, evidence that was sitting there has been made available. I don't think anybody in intelligence anywhere is disagreeing that the weapons were there. They were dismantled or sold to Syria. And it went on in the exact line that I have it drawn out in the conspiracy that I lay out in the book there. And that was the irony of it.
We don't have a lot of time left in the show, but I wanted to ask you, would President Bush have done better to attack Iran first?
No, in the analysis I did in the book, it had to go down the way it did because of the power that Saddam Hussein had. He had already demonstrated and had, in fact, attacked and invaded that country. To have tried to do that first would have opened the door for him to grab mm-hmm. more ground and do a different type of war. I think we're draining the swamp, and we've lured him out into open territory, and that's not pleasant for Americans to watch. But it is part of the war game. That's not the main game, though.
Right.
The war game, people figure that out eventually.
Right. Well, we'll take it up again because the show is so short.
Yeah.
We don't have time to cover everything. But, Lee, where can people get your book?
They can get it at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, or they can go straight to my site, lulu.com/Lee Kessler.
Excellent. Well, this is wonderful. So I wanted to advise you, the opinions heard here are those of the producer, the host, and the guests, not of the radio station or their affiliates or their anybody. This is Ariella for Kaleidoscope Radio Magazine. After you read the book, I'm very interested to know what you think of it, so write me. My name is Ariella. Write me at this email address, unity4peace, for the numeral 4, at AOL.com. Again, that's unity, the number 4, peace, at AOL.com.
You're listening to KCLA, 99.3 FM, Los Angeles.